Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you doing, John?
I am all roboticized.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Yes. Good morning. Nice to be here.
Awesome to have you. And also awesome to have Dave Hamilton here. How are you, Dave?
I am well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you. And it's just lots of fun. So, topics for today that I thought would be really interesting to take a look at. The news is out that Facebook is working on, well, from my perspective, they're working on becoming a major news outlet themselves, in a manner of speaking. They introduced a new service today called Instant Articles, and this is a service that is going to be, or actually is, available in the Facebook iPhone app. And what it does is it lets publications like right now the New York Times and National Geographic and BuzzFeed and a handful of others, they're actually able to put their full articles in line in your Facebook feed, as opposed to giving you a link to the article that then takes you out to their website. So this is doing a couple things. First, it's keeping people in the Facebook experience. And then the other thing, which Facebook is touting, is that it allows the content to load substantially faster than if people leave Facebook and go to the website. And then publications can really customize their content right in your feed. So you can do things like tilt your iPhone and have photos move around so you can see different parts of them. And you can have interactive maps, and you can have video that's part of the article, and then it can have additional formatting so that say your site uses a custom font that isn't Facebook's font, you can have your article show with your typeface. So there's all these things that they're promising with this, and advertisers' fees will go to the publications. So if a publication sells an ad, they get all the money for that. If Facebook sells an ad that goes into the article, Facebook keeps 30%. So Facebook is offering some incentivizing to get companies to bring their content into Facebook. So I'm finding this very fascinating, and I'm curious what you guys are thinking.
Yeah, well, I think it's we've heard about this, right? This has been brewing for a while. They announced their intention to do this. I mean, it rolled out today or began rolling out today, but they've been talking about this for a little while, and you know, it is curious that on the surface anyway, it's curious that any news provider, let alone one like the New York Times, would want to give up control like this. I mean, essentially, in a way, you're taking your content and really kind of I'm thinking of here.
You're repurposing it as Facebook content.
That's a great word. Yeah, you're repurposing it as Facebook content, and that's, you know, that's a business decision that I find surprising for the New York Times to make. Right, they don't get to control the experience; they just get to put their content out there. They don't get the people at their site. They don't get to, you know, design a site to be sticky and all of that stuff. But maybe that's the old model, right? Maybe now all you're doing is you create the content and let people consume it when and where they want. And you know, that's
Dave. I wonder what this does to branding. The New York Times has a legacy. They have a history. They have a reputation. Their website's designed to promote that. When everybody's jumbled into Facebook, everybody's all alike.
All right,
but that's where people want their content, right?
Yeah,
that's
where
the thing
want
is
their content.
Go to where the people are. Don't expect the people to come to you. And that's that's the mind shift difference. But it's not. It's a mind shift for Facebook. It's not a mind shift for the consumers, especially, you know, as the younger demographic gets older, right? That is used to just, you know, here's where I am. If your content isn't here, then I won't see it. And that's, yeah. But you know, and this is, you know, we talked a little bit about this in the past, but, you know, Facebook has we have a page on Facebook, and we post our articles to that page and all that. But because it is a company-owned page and Facebook is aware of that, they deprioritize us unless we pay. And we do pay. It's part of the deal. We want our stuff exposed to Facebook's readers. And so, yes, absolutely, we pay. And it's great because a lot of people – I probably shouldn't say this because it might cost us more. But a lot of people tend not to pay because, you know, whatever, they're philosophically against it or emotionally against the whole concept of paying Facebook. And so it leaves it, relatively speaking, pretty cheap for us to continue doing that. I expect that to change. But at some point.
But hopefully not soon.
It certainly hasn't yet. I've been expecting it for a year and a half. So,
all right. So there's a couple things that I see here that while on the surface, I'm thinking, man, New York Times, National Geographic, they're ceding control over their content to Facebook. How can that be? But I look at the number of Facebook users there are. Currently, 1.44 billion, with a B, billion active Facebook users every month. And this is 2015 statistics. So it's not like the numbers have dropped. They're going up. So, yep. So nearly 1.5 billion people, that's more people than live in the United States.
Jeff, I have a question about what you were talking about, ceding control. So New York Times gets to develop the content.
Mm-hmm.
They get to put a wrapper around it so that you know it's New York Times, mm-hmm. right? And it's the same content you would find on their own website because they're not going to rewrite it. So in that sense, they're not ceding a whole lot of control over the presentation and the content and the branding that's wrapped around it.
No, they're not. And that has to be a really good thing for publishers because their content is still branded. And it still has their look.
Right. What I worry about is as soon as Facebook figures out that everybody's moved over to their place, they're going to make it tougher and tougher on companies that have forsaken their own website to stay there, a piece of the action type of extortion.
It comes down. Dave? Yeah, it comes. I'm sorry to interrupt. I get all excited. It comes down to the content, right? You know, and to a degree, not even to a degree. We deal with this with our podcasts and have for 10 years. Yes, we are able to put our podcasts and link to them from our website at MacObserver.com, but we also put them in the iTunes store, right? We go to where the podcast listeners are and hope that we get some sort of exposure there and some traction there and listeners there. And what does it come down to? It comes down to the content. Now, just in the iTunes store, there are certain things you can do to make sure your podcast gets exposed properly. And I'm sure the same will be true. You know, it's like search engine optimization to a degree, right? And the same is true in search engines and Google News, right? You know, you get your stuff in Google News, but you want it to be exposed in a certain way.
Will Google be able to search that content on Facebook?
Google, yes. Yeah, well, I mean, that's up to Facebook. Currently, yes, but...
yeah, they can turn that off at some point.
Of course they can.
Of course, sure.
Yeah, so, I think... I mean, this is essentially what it's doing is it's turning everyone into a content syndicator or a content provider for a syndication service. And Facebook has now started effectively a content syndication service, right? You know, that you can put your stuff here and there's some quid pro quo that's going to happen and take it or leave it, you know. But we've got this audience and we want to provide them content. And we would love it to be yours, right? But that's the message that's being sent is from Facebook. It's their audience. They are the gatekeeper. They get to decide and they've partnered with the New York Times, hopefully for a mutually beneficial deal. But It's you know, driven by Facebook. The New York Times doesn't get to make a lot of decisions in this process other than to keep creating good content.
Right. And I think, at least for now, this makes sense because there are a lot of people out there that use Facebook as their interface to the internet.
It's the new AOL.
Yeah, yes, it's the new AOL.
Kids, ask your parents about that or ask Verizon.
Or ask Verizon about that. We'll send you a floppy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're not putting your content where the people are, your content isn't going to be seen. It doesn't matter how good it is. So, yeah, I have a feeling that Facebook is – well, they've done a lot over the years to experiment with bringing content to us so that we stay in the Facebook experience. I think this is a lot of that coming to fruition, all those experiments coming together to make a new thing. And if this is as successful as Facebook hopes, and it's likely it will be, then Facebook becomes a really big name in the media world.
Yeah, content syndication. It's what they're doing. And, you know, to your point, I agree. I think this will work, and it will be a big deal. Again, going back to the AOL analogy, you know, the first big land grab on the internet was not domain names. It was AOL keywords. And you wanted to make sure you got and reserved the AOL keyword for your company before somebody else got it. And there were many companies that went and intentionally got AOL keywords and ignored going to get their own domain names and then had to pay the price down the road and buy their domain name from some, you know, I guess somebody that we would call a harvester now, right? You know, but it was just some enterprising kid, most likely.
Right.
You know, but that you know,
domain squatter.
Well, it wasn't even, I mean, yeah, it was so early on, but you're right. Yeah, they were domain squatters. But the point is, this human nature leads us to want to do this. It worked very, very well with AOL, right? And remember, they bought Time Warner for, what, 20 times what they sold the entire shooting match to more than that, more than 20. It was like almost 80 times, right? But anyway, it was a significant chunk, more than they sold yesterday, right? So there is precedent for this. This whole concept of you go into a web browser and know where to go, that makes sense to us geeks. Most people, you know, it's Google or now Facebook is their, you know, front end, their portal to the internet. It's how we humans work. So Facebook is in a great position right now.
Yeah, they
are. Like it or not. Yep.
Yep. And if you want to get your content out in front of people, you have to play their game.
The proof will be in the pudding, in the metrics. If the readership goes up, then everybody will do it.
That's right.
Yep, there you go.
But your readership at your site won't go up. The New York Times will not see an increased readership to nytimes.com, but they will see increased readership to their content, and that is what will lead people to do it.
Yep, there you go. Hey, another thing I wanted to take a look at today. Dave, you put together a really good piece where you are echoing my sentiments exactly. And this is on how you are perceiving and then managing the apps that go onto your Apple Watch.
Yeah, so this started on TDO last week. I believe it was Thursday, where you kind of enlightened me, for lack of a better – well, because that's the right term to how best to manage things on my watch. When I got my watch, I did what everybody else or most people would do is I took the defaults from Apple and it said, you know, put all these apps on there. Yeah. Put all these glances on there. Yeah. You know, I keep a ton of apps on my iPhone. I test a lot of things, but it's fine. I just, you know, they tuck some things out of the way. It's not usually an issue. There's, you know, one app that tends to burn a lot of battery in the background, Skype. You know, otherwise they're all pretty good. And if I'm not running them, it's fine. And so I have a ton of apps and it just barfed all these apps onto my watch. And for 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks, I hated my watch. I mean, I didn't hate it. I just didn't find it useful. It was sort of a clumsy to manage and pick anything I wanted. And going into Glances was this horribly worthless experience because I had a ton of them out there, and finding the right app and even using apps wasn't great. And so I decided I would adopt the ruthless management or the ruthless gatekeeper approach after talking to you. And I went through and I removed everything from my watch, everything, and then turned on those things that I thought I wanted and tested each one of them on the watch and turned a lot of those off because I found that they weren't actually what I wanted. You know, like the Twitter app was a great example. I wrote about it, too. I use Twitter's native apps on iOS and on the Mac because Twitter keeps making changes to their infrastructure, and it's just easier if I'm using their apps because then I get their features and I don't have to wait for third parties. Although the Mac app is now falling behind, but whatever. So I use Twitter's native apps, and I was like, well, okay, I want Twitter on my watch. I want to get notifications when somebody mentions me. I want to be able to reply. I want to be able to favorite and retweet if somebody mentions me. But that's not what Twitter's watch app does. Twitter's watch app lets me scroll through my entire tweet stream on my watch. No, not interested. You know?
No, that is so not what you need on your watch.
Right. I want that on my phone. That makes sense. It makes sense to have it on my desktop, but my watch is a different size screen. It's a different use case. So
maybe
but
direct messages on the watch.
And direct messages would be perfect. That's right. And that's it. That's all I want. And it turns out Twitterific does that right. And so I put Twitterific. I had to put it on my phone because you have to have it on the phone on the watch. And if you want notifications, you have to let it notify you on the phone. In this case, I wanted Twitterific to only notify me on the watch. That's not currently possible, again, because of the fact that the watch is really a companion to the phone and that's how it's managed. But it was fine. I got over that pretty quickly. And it works great. And then I still left, even for a couple days, I still left the Twitter app on there because I thought, well, someday they'll, you know, no app developer is going to get it right first round because most of them didn't even have a chance to test it on the watch and certainly haven't heard from users yet. So it's going to take a little time for people to iterate. I'll leave the Twitter app out there and I'll test it when they update it because they're going to have to update it. Well, no, that's the wrong way.
That's exactly the wrong way.
Get it the heck off of there, and that, which is what I did. And I'll watch the change logs on my iPhone. And when I see that they mention something about updated watch experience, if it sounds even remotely like something I might like, I'll just quickly turn it back on. My phone is never far away from my watch. My watch is, in fact, useless, almost useless, without my phone nearby somewhere, at least in terms of things like apps. It can tell the time. And it can send messages sometimes if you're on the right Wi-Fi network. But, you know, otherwise it sort of needs the phone. So it's just not that big of a deal. It's not like the phone where you've got to sort of tuck apps away and say, oh, well, yeah, I'm traveling and I don't have access to the internet. So I want to have that app saved away just in case I'm in airplane mode or, you know, whatever. Now, in airplane mode, you can't install something to the watch. But once you turn yourself out of airplane mode, you don't need to be on a Wi-Fi network. It'll blast the things over there, you know, just direct ad hoc from the watch to the phone or phone to the watch. And everything's fine. So I did. I turned off the Twitter app. And then I did that with like four other apps that I was doing the same thing with. I had this, you know, real, I was holding on to a future promise that's not even a promise, right? Twitter hasn't promised me that they're going to do this. I'm just assuming.
No, so you were holding on to hope.
Hope.
Yeah, I want to ask you guys about this.
Yeah, yeah.
This all started with Yosemite or Mavericks and notifications. I'm sensing that Apple has this overly zealous enthusiasm for notifications and features, and that stuff is on by default, that Apple assumes that if you don't use something, that if you don't see it right away, if you're not immersed in it, then you won't turn it on, you won't like it. So everything's on by default. No, you reinstall
you got
the operating system.
Going on in the background, John.
Yeah, I had a jet plane fly over.
Yeah, that condenser mic is biting you.
Military,
biting you twice today. That's
military
right.
Military flight.
And all right, go ahead. All right, go ahead.
So, you know, if you install a new version of the operating system and Bluetooth is automatically turned on because Apple wants you to be able to take advantage of iBeacon and things. And so here we are with the Apple Watch. And like you said, so eloquently, everything's turned on. And the question is, why didn't Apple take a more conservative approach to close things down and let you gently discover the features of the watch instead of annoying you? And if you're annoyed, other people are, yep. by obliterating you with all the things that it can do.
Well, and we haven't even – I didn't even touch on notifications in my article. But, you know, it, by default, the watch shows you every notification that appears on your phone. Holy crap.
Right.
That's a disaster. And the worst – the absolute worst part about it is there's no way for me to tell the watch on the watch, don't show me notifications from this app anymore. I have to go into the phone and dig into the deal and turn off, you know, into the Apple Watch app environment on the phone and turn off the notifications there. I would love it. When you get a notification on the watch, if, and this is a good tip, if you force tap on it, you get one option, and that is to clear all, mark all notifications as red, which is handy. Mm-hmm. That should not go away. That is a brilliant tip. And if you didn't know about it, you're probably leaping for joy at home and hopefully not in your car while you're driving. However, there could be another option right next to that that said disable notifications for this app and that or disable watch notifications for this app. Because
that
there's some
be perfect.
Yeah. I just want to say, oh, I never want to see that on my watch again. You barfed them all out here. I get that you turned everything on. That's great. But this one, no. Never again. I'm good. You know, and that would do it. Like
it seems like we need some human interface guidelines that don't exist.
Yeah, but we need some that we dictate back to Apple.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's up to Apple to conceive of that in the first place.
Yeah,
and create guidelines that they think are sensible for the user, and then teach us how to exploit it as necessary.
That's
but
right.
to just to overflow us with all the features at once seems like an interesting a bad idea,
especially
in my mind.
With apps that are poorly written. And I really don't blame the app developers for this, right? I mean, it was predictable that these first wave of apps on the watch were kind of going to be, you know, rough. We saw it with the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I expected it, and I give the app developers a lot of leeway with this initially, because they were making it up blind, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
but I will say, after having been ruthless with this and really managing, you know, the glances quickly, six, no more. Turn them off. If you got more than six, your life will be better. And being ruthless with glances, apps, and as you mentioned, John, notifications. I'm really loving my watch over the last few days here. I mean, it's been a mind shift for me, and I'm starting to finally grok it.
Yeah. I'm glad that we had our discussion last week because it was clear that you were having some frustration with your watch.
Yeah.
And when I set my watch up and it got to the section where it's like, send over all the apps. I didn't even have a moment's hesitation. It was just no. I know I don't want to have everything there. And I'm glad that I had that instinct because it paid off for me and now it's paying off for you. And
yep.
Hopefully this is going to pay off for all of our listeners too.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, we're out of time. So Dave, thank you for running with our conversation from last week and putting together such an awesome article today.
My pleasure.
And then John, thank you for being here too and bringing your insight, which is always welcome. And
Thank you. I heard my watch is going to ship today.
That's fantastic. See, I told you it was going to be coming.
I know it was a long wait.
Yeah, but my guess is that by tomorrow you will be deep in the middle of finding out just which apps really are developed.
Yeah, deep in the middle of shutting it down and being smart user.
Good for you. Yes. And listeners, thank you for joining us yet again today. Head over to the iTunes store and rate the show for me, please, because I always love your feedback. And when you do that, it makes it easier for other people to find us and join in too. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.